that's South Africa's Hugh Masekela with Tim Lela. This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, October the 16th, and a program I hope will provoke a great deal of thought and reaction. But first, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. I was in Brooklyn last night with the United African Movement meeting there in the heart of Brooklyn. And the turnout was very, very, very impressive indeed. And we had a great discussion about reclaiming and rebuilding and rebounding in terms of community work. And I just had such a wonderful time. It is always a pleasure to come back to community work, and you get a sense of it as a homecoming, and it really was. So I want to thank you very much for your warmth and for the enthusiasm and the just a beautiful feeling, the beautiful vibe in the room. Thank you so much. Enjoyed it immensely. Today I want to challenge us to think or rethink, actually, to redefine our concept, our thoughts, our orientation about voting. My position, and I've made it very clear, is that we simply cannot participate in the process as it is. To do so is to legitimize it, and I think there is great reason and strong evidence to support it that the system as it exists is unworkable. It does not, though it purports to be, but it does not contribute to democracy. That is the standard line, that voting is the promotion of democracy. Voting is an extension and an expression of democracy. I'm pretty practical about it. Voting is not at all about that. Voting is simply a method used to elect a governing body. That's all it is. It is no more, no less, no great emotional attachment to this. This is not a spiritual exercise. It's not an evangelical process. It is simply citizens deciding on who they believe should be part of the governing system, whether it's local or statewide or nationwide. But that's all it is. So to lift it any higher than that is just to indulge in a kind of fantasy. It's propaganda to say, well, it's a democratic process. No. None of that is true. I've also explained to you what my version of democracy is. It has nothing to do with voting. Democracy is best understood, in my view, as the degree to which all citizens have some meaningful access to the strategic resources of our society. Now, that's democracy. The strategic resources are those things that we require as citizens to have a decent life, and that presumably, in a government by the people for the people, we share access to these resources as not as a privilege, but as a right, because that is the system that supposedly we are part of. Strategic resources would include things like employment. Employment is a very strategic resource. Or health care. Or quality education. Or housing. Or safety in our neighborhoods, including from brutal police. That's a strategic resource. One could see how, for example, in some communities, they experience policing, while other communities experience law enforcement. Two different things, but really it's the same resource used very, very differently in different communities. food is a strategic resource. Can we argue, based on the statistics that we have, can we argue that everybody in America has good access to food? I would say no. Based on the information that we have, the documented proof. So when measured by these standards, this is how democracy, in my view, is to be measured. When measured on these conditions and on these factors, you get a pretty good idea of whether you are, in fact, part of a democracy or not. So democracy has nothing to do with voting. That's the first thing we need to understand. Because, in fact, there are people who don't vote at all, and they have everything they need from the government. So that itself presents an anomaly. So what I want to encourage is a rethinking. We should all rethink this whole thing called voting. And in rethinking it, we rethink it as strategic people, a strategic part of a process of reformation. And it has nothing to do with changing the government. Forget that. You can't change the government. They already have their mind set up and their systems in place. The change that needs to occur is on the other side. That's us. We have not changed at all. And consequently, the government that regulates just about everything we do has not changed, except that it has become more out of control, more involved in regulating us, and less likely to listen to us, which is what the whole thing is about. We, the people, are supposed to be supposed to have access to the throttle and brake. Not just access, we're supposed to control the throttle and brake of government. It's supposed to stop when we say stop. It's supposed to go when we say go. But, of course, government doesn't give a damn about what we think. They do their own thing. The government is at war. Did we give them permission to do so? No. It didn't even ask for permission from the government to do so. So we have recklessness and an out-of-control government. That's the standard. That's the norm now. And so it is incumbent upon us, if for no other reason than our own survival and the fact that we can live much more easily with ourselves, as practitioners of this conscious voting, strategic voting, selective voting, because that is a good way of communicating where we are. And again, this is not about changing the government. It's about changing us. And if we do that, we will see the commensurate change elsewhere. They'll get a message somehow. And because in the end, they still will depend on the votes of the people to get by, they will make some kind of amends. All right, so what are the options? What is this idea of strategic voting? It means that you utilize this vote in a way that sends a message about where you are. Again, this is not about you compelling some kind of a moralistic change and turn of events. They're incapable of that. But it is important that you express your will regardless. You vote selectively. Let's say that. You can vote selectively. So what is selective voting? You pick and choose. You may vote for somebody and vote against others. That's selective voting. Well, in order to do that, you have to have an appreciation of the person and where the person stands on critical issues that are important to you. But the downside is, when you vote selectively, the downside is you're still voting within the context of a two-party system that by now should be anathema to you. It should revile you. It should disgust you. Because neither party is relevant anymore to our day-to-day survival. Neither party reflects really where we are as a collective. So the downside to this form of voting, selective voting, is that while you may select somebody who may very well be qualified in that respect, that the person really is a community person, they really have a passion about being of service to the community, they may really take an interest in the same things that you have an interest in and which are priorities to you, they nonetheless are part of a putrid system. So even as you vote for a person, you negate the vote because that person is part of a system that is no longer relevant. But that may still have an effect. It still may send a signal that there are a growing group of people here who are voting selectively. And they'll find, you know, they'll pay consultants millions of dollars to figure out what that means. But in the meantime, it is important to suggest to the two-party system a change is occurring. Now, do you want to take on the burden of teaching a truculent political system a lesson? Is that a good use of your time? That's for you to think. But that is an option. We're discussing options here. That's an option, selective voting. So we know that you can pick and choose the candidates, but we also know that you will countermand the intent of your vote that way, this particular kind of vote, by nonetheless supporting the party, whether it's Republican or Democratic Party, you'll be supporting their system, and their system is no longer viable to a progress. Basically. So that's one option. I'm not saying these are perfect options. I'm not saying they are the best solutions. We're putting options on the table. Option number two is that you can vote for a non-mainstream party. Well, there are quite a few that are popping up. A non-mainstream party is a party that is absolutely outside of the political sphere and political philosophy as expressed by the mainstream parties. And we know it's a duopoly, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. Any other party is a viable option. And so you determine the viability of that option by getting to know what this other party is all about. What is that other party trumpeting as their philosophy? And how does that philosophy differ in terms of your point of reference from what you know from the Democratic Party and the Republican Party? What system do they have in play? Do they impress you as being serious and committed as a party to political change, the kind of change that you would like to see? Does this party in any way reflect your own political philosophy? Do they look like they want to win? And that's a problem I have with third parties or independent parties that pop up. Many of them seem to just want to be there just for being there, and that in and of itself is the political game, aim and game. It's not sufficient. If you're going to be in it, you would want to win it. The Green Party, for example, is a perfect example of what it is I'm talking about. Now, here's a party that is about the environment, and it's a major concern because a lot of people have, in our political experience, we have come to be largely single-issue type parties. And I lament that. I think it's a bit limited, but it is nonetheless a viable option. Because there are people who may feel more passionately about a particular thing as opposed to a collection of things. So it presents an option. But the parties themselves have to act like they're serious. I've remarked many times that here, in this moment that we are in, this should be the moment when all these parties should be flooding communities with their presence, with their activities, with their visibility. This is when they ought to be deep into organizing, getting to know the people and getting people to know them, what it is you're about, why it is you are a viable option, how it is that you differ from that circus that goes on in Washington or the city council or the state legislature, and what it is you have to offer. What are you doing to win attention, attraction, and the confidence of people in your capacity not just to show up on a ballot, but your capacity to lead, your capacity to execute the plans that they want? How are you as a party an integral part of what it is they are experiencing, what it is they want to do as a community? This is the time, but they're not visible. The downside to a non-mainstream party is, because politics is a numbers business, people will say, well, maybe people would be interested in your party, but not in the numbers sufficient to actually make an impression on the political process. That should not worry you. Change is not about, it doesn't happen like that. Sometimes change is a gradual process. But what should matter to you is that you are contributing to a movement away from a putrid process. So, this is an option. The downside also is that in supporting third-party efforts, the third parties have to come strong. No kind of, as the Jamaicans say, no fenke-fenke stuff going on. Be true and committed. And be relevant. It is amazing to me that in light of what is happening in Detroit, no third parties have actually stepped forward as parties. When I say no party, you know what I mean. There are movements, there are local movements and left-of-center movements, no question about it, and thank God for them, because they have been extremely important and relevant in grassroots responses to the issues confronting the majority of Detroiters. But the Green Party has not been there. We saw Elizabeth Warren, the so-called liberal senator, managing to appear at an almost all-white conference of techies in Detroit and managing still to ignore what she was in the midst of. That speaks volumes. And while you're talking about the banks and all of this stuff, great. Well, have you bothered to take pay attention to the impact of foreclosures on communities of color in this country? How devastating it has been. And right there in Detroit, the projection is on top of the losses already sustained. 150,000 more foreclosures in the next couple of years, and this does not dawn on you, and you are physically in the middle of that reality, and it still does not register on you as a potential candidate or even as a political force within the Senate to make this an issue, to compel attention to this, because Detroit is symptomatic of what is happening in so many other communities, especially communities of color. So third parties have to make themselves relevant. Third party candidates have to make themselves relevant, and they have to overcome this resistance to talking about race, which is central to the entire political question in our country. on social grounds, political grounds, economic grounds. Race is inimical to all of this. So we have to deal with that. That's the downside. Third option is literally to opt out, to not vote. And not as a sense of frustration or out of apathy, but to not vote as a conscious, proactive move. Now, that sounds a little odd. Why would not voting be considered a proactive move? Because it is also a strategic move. And not voting, but not voting loudly. That's the whole point, to just leave the process. And again, not out of frustration, you just can't quietly cancel your political cards and you slink off into the dark corner somewhere. They will think of that as apathy. But if you are loud about it, I am loudly not voting, I am loudly not cooperating with this putrid process, I'm loudly refusing to lend my good vote to something that has proven itself to be completely irrelevant to just not me, but my community. So that is an option too. But if you don't vote, here's the downside to it, not voting, and if you don't do it right, if you do not vote, not vote right, okay? You can, in fact, aid and abet the very thing that you're trying to make a point about. And that is the fact that you are withdrawing, consciously withdrawing from this process. It has not met your standards. It therefore does not meet your approval. So you will not be voting. So what are your thoughts about these options? We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. We'll talk about your version of your political options this election season. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead. I forgot to go through the downside of opting out. One very important point before I take your calls is that people would say it is just a slap in the face of all your forebears who went through the trouble and the suffering and the pain and the brutality, the price they paid to vote, and therefore to opt out, to not vote, is practically an act of sacrilege based on the sacrifices made. My counter to that would be they went through all of that not to win the right to vote. I would argue that it was not about the right to vote in the first place. That's the propaganda. The propaganda is they went through all of this for the right to vote. Wrong. They went through all of this for the right as citizens of this country, the right to be recognized as citizens of the country, the right to vote being one of the things and one of the methods of proof of citizenry or citizenship. You understand? So when people say, well, they suffered for the right to vote, understand that the right to vote and all of that was part of a continuum of struggle. And the essential struggle was about human rights, natural rights. The right to vote is part of the argument about natural rights. And it was, in that time, it was to communicate evidence of a recognition of natural rights. So voting rights in and of itself was not the aim and objective. The struggle was the continuing struggle in America for recognition of human rights for people who were destined by this racist apartheid system in which we live, destined not to enjoy them because they did not qualify by law as human beings. So don't get the two confused. And those who are confused need to be reminded that this was not a fight for the right to vote. And this is why I reject categorically all of this emotion-laden stuff as a kind of propaganda to get black people to act like a bunch of sheep. The psychological trauma we are supposed to experience when we decide, or if we should decide, not to vote. Because not voting, if it is a strategic move, even our forebears would say good thinking, very good thinking, it would be a kind of boycott. It would be the boycotting a moral judgment, as a matter of fact. They would be highly approving of such a move based on that rationale. So, I don't recognize the argument that people died for the right to vote. That is not an argument to me. It doesn't fly. It makes no sense. And in fact, it's a distortion of history. And we ought to condemn it because it is the ongoing psychological threat that gets black people, in particular, to contribute to a foul system and to be ever so faithful to it because they believe it would be disloyal and a kind of dishonor to their forebears who, quote, fought for the right to vote. No, they were fighting for their right to live. And it was not a new fight. Okay? So let's be really clear about that. Automatically reject this business about, well, they fought for the right to vote. No, the right to vote was a part of a continuing struggle for the recognition of their humanity in this country. And it was simply one of the aspects in which society determines that you are a part of it. You are a citizen. And with the African-American community, the age-old position, and especially by the Democratic Party, this was the party of the Klan, don't forget that, with the Democratic Party was black people were never, ever supposed to be citizens of this country because they were not human. They were less than human. They were chattel. And the mentality still exists that we are chattel, which is why we have all various forms of psychological manipulation to please those who owned us in the past and who continue to own us psychologically today. And the way they keep you loyal to them, even though they're just, you know, stabbing you in the back all the time and in the front, they're just stabbing you. The idea is that you will nonetheless be more inclined, if you are psychologically conditioned, to believe that not voting or voting against them is an act of pretty much blasphemy and you spitting in the face of your ancestors. So disavow all of that. That makes no sense. Okay, your calls now, 888-874-4888. what are your political choices? And of the choices that were put on the table today, which makes sense to you? There's no right or wrong. It's just about what you're thinking. But the most important thing that this whole discussion is meant to do is to trigger a reappraisal of where you are on this question of voting at all. Have you come to terms with what it means to you? Have you been, are you guilty in a way of aiding and abetting a foul process? Are you helping to maintain this foul process with your vote? And why? Have you come to the point of realizing that there are other options on the table and you will vote strategically or selectively or not at all? What's your choice? 888-874-4888. All right, we'll take your calls as soon as they come in. And I want you to give some real considered thought and opinion about this, because this is going to be a major question beyond this election. It's not just about this election. It's about shaping your attitude about this function as a citizen, this function of electing a governing body. What do you understand your rights to be with respect to that function, that governmental function? And beyond that, how do you see yourself influencing a government or governing body and the formation of such and the regulation of such and consequently the impact of such a body on your day-to-day life and the life of your community? What are your views? I don't see anything on the board, so it means that you have not called in yet, which is unusual, because I thought this would stimulate you. This would get you to politically state your views. Oh, I don't know. I have you today. I think you just, you know, you're trying to figure out what's the best way to state it so I'm not right and I'm not wrong. Well, there's no right or wrong here. It is just a matter of you thinking and rethinking this process, because it's going to be very, very important to literally changing our society. It starts right here. This is the organic start of a movement, that you're rethinking your options. From Lafayette, Jamila, you're on the air.
This is you, Therese.
Hello.
Hotep.
Hotep to you.
I was calling to let you know that I agree with you 100%. And whenever I hear you talking about voting, I always think of Dr. Amos Wilson and the lecture that he gave about voting being a ritual, and that the candidates were already bought and paid for. It's a very powerful lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely correct. We do have to rethink our options. And, yes, voting, that emotionalism, that people died for us to vote. They died for justice.
Exactly.
So that's what I was calling to let you know, that I do agree with you on this subject.
But how,
and thank
therefore,
you for the wonderful shows.
Thank you so much, Jamila.
Have.
Thank you so much. But I'm going to ask you a question. How does what you just said influence your own action this election season and beyond it?
For some reason, I can't hear you.
How does what you just said to me, how does that influence your political action?
That emotionalism.
Yes.
That people died for us to vote. They died for justice. So that's what I was calling to let you know, that I do agree with you on this subject.
But how?
And thank
therefore,
you for, the money.
Are you hearing me now?
Thank you so much.
Oh, we're getting echoes. All right, Jamila, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it very much. From New York, Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, Therese. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you today?
What Hello?
Are your What are your options?
Hello?
Yes, I'm hearing you.
Oh, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I'm happy to hear that you're in New York, gracing us with your presence.
Thank you. We will be meeting next week. I'm going to be around so we can meet and greet.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. You know, you've asked this question before, maybe in a, in a different way, but it's come up before. And my feeling about all of this is, there are many times when I don't vote, simply because I'm so repelled by what I hear and see. like everybody else. But the problem with that is after one doesn't vote, what comes next? And for that to be an effective political tool, you really have to have massive numbers of people who don't vote. Mm-hmm. Because in any election, enormous numbers aren't going to vote anyway. In congressional elections, the last figures that I saw say that 35% of the electorate vote in congressional elections. So, and municipal elections aren't that much better, unless there's some, you know, riveting issue that drives people to the polls. So I think that if that option is chosen, then we need to organize around that option so that significant numbers, really significant numbers, failed. You know, in the last presidential election, the last two, and also in the 2004 presidential election, there was discussion about the fervent and energetic manner by which people came to the vote to the polls because of the danger of a Republican victory. And yet, you know, in the 2004 election, I think 58% of the electorate voted. In the 2012 election, I think it was 59% or 60%. So still, you still had 40% of the electorate who stayed home. And I think that, you know, that's fine, but then we have to organize around that principle, articulate an alternative politics that reflects the reasons for our unwillingness to vote for either of these candidates. That means organizing.
Exactly.
And it means organizing rapidly because, you know, we always have to understand the historical circumstances that we live in. In the African-American community in the mid-60s, there really was an attempt to create an alternative politics. I remember when Carmichael and Hamilton wrote Black Power, a lot of people who ordinarily wouldn't read these books were reading them in African-American communities. Now, we can have a long discussion some other time as to why this didn't achieve fruition, but there at least was a sense that empowerment comes through organization and through creating a kind of alternative political structure with a nomenclature that is identified with that structure that has nothing to do with these two corporate parties. So I'm making the case again for organization and also for the end to identity politics. And I was in Miami recently visiting a relative, and I went down to visit a friend who lived in Liberty City, mm-hmm. Which is primarily an African-American community. Deep impoverishment and all the problems that are associated with poverty. But I walked through that community about 6 in the morning, and it was flooded, as so many neighborhoods in Miami are in the morning. And there were the trucks there shoveling the sand away. And I said to myself, you know, in 10 years, this is going to be a lot worse. Everybody knows what's going to happen in Florida, South Florida, and then the opposite, North Florida, the drought there. What I'm saying is that these people who don't have that many possibilities because of their weak economic position are going to be in great difficulty when Liberty City eventually becomes uninhabitable. The people who live in the Grove, in Coconut Grove, in Coral Gables, because they have so many possibilities, because they have equity, they have capital, will be able to more or less take care of themselves. What about all these impoverished people in communities around the country who are going to be faced with the economic privations brought about by this massive change in life? What are they going to do? And it's so important for us to organize around principles like that so that in an African-American community like Liberty City, we can bring together a coalition of people who are preoccupied with social and economic concerns and people who are, as we all should, are preoccupied with the dramatic changes that are taking place in the climate and go beyond identity politics and create a kind of popular front that will be, because we have the numbers that will be necessary to confront this corporate monster that is only bringing us on. They're going down, and because of their stupidity, they're going to bring us down with them. So we really need to organize, and we need to do it soon.
No question about it. No question.
We do not have the luxury of time anymore. And that means that people who are thinking about this have to go out into the community and talk about it.
My point exactly.
And one other thing, it means, and I see this on the Upper West Side of Manhattan all the time, when political campaigns start, forget about the Republicans, who are all criminal degenerates, and fascists, but the Democrats, who are a little better, but not much better, are out there pleading with us to vote for them, or else, you know, we'll get the other side. We need to confront these Democrats and tell them, you know, what they are, and do it openly. In other words, we can't really be quiet about this. We have to be steadfast, consistent, and persistent.
This is my point about not
trouble.
Exactly. My point's exactly. This is not a process to be quiet about. You have to be loud about opting out.
Right. Right. You know, I have to tell you that I think it was October the 5th, I went to Chris Hedges' ordination in Elizabeth, New Jersey. It really was amazing, and you can see it on YouTube. And in particular, one should listen to the sermon that the Reverend James Cone gave in behalf of Chris's ordination. Cone is, for people who don't know, is a radical African-American theologian who's been training ministers for 40 years, and he kept talking about the necessity of being troublemakers.
Great. Thank you so much for your call, Joel. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Appreciate
bye-bye.
It. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, you three?
Fine, thank you.
All right. You know what? You're absolutely right with this rhetoric about, you know, people saying, well, you have to vote because people died, you know, for your voting rights and, you know, blah, blah, this and blah, blah, that. But, you know, I tell people, you know what? You need to read Malcolm X's speech of The Ballot and the Bullet, because he laid out clearly how we should vote. And the one thing that people miss in that speech was he said that a ballot is about as important as a bullet. You don't waste any bullets. Unless you see a target, you keep the bullet in your pocket. And that's exactly what I feel. You know, that's exactly the way I feel. You know, it's like, you know, I don't see a target, so I'm not shooting. So, but the thing is that, and Joel basically, you know, kind of laid it out clearly, and I agree with him wholeheartedly, is that we need to have action while we're keeping our ballot in our pockets to get out, you know, to strategize what we're going to do the next time the voting season comes around. And you know, the problem with third party politics is I just feel like. I don't know how to say it, but just take, for example, the Green Party of Illinois. You were talking about the Green Party. You know, I'm still wondering why they don't have a mayoral candidate to run against Rahm Emanuel. His approval rating is so low here that it would be a viable thing for them to just, you know, present a third-party candidate out here. Because I don't know if you know, Karen Lewis has brain cancer, so she's basically dropped out. And,
yes.
You know, I'm praying she, you know, she gets better. But yeah, she's now dropped out, and a lot of people thought that she might have been the hope to take down Rahm. But yeah, I'm kind of disappointed with the Green Party, because I mean, this is the right time to capture this city, because like I said, Rahm's approval rating is so low that I mean, there is a chance for somebody to beat him.
I think so, and I think you know, Karen Lewis's. I was so sad about learning of her health challenge. She's said to have brain cancer, a tumor that is cancerous in the brain, and so she decided that she will not run. But that doesn't mean that she's out. You know, she could still heavily influence the emergence of a candidate. It might be too late for this election cycle to mount a credible campaign against Rahm Emanuel. But it may not be a bad idea, however, to look to an opponent. I don't understand why there doesn't seem to be very much enthusiasm about the Democratic opponent. But the cultivation of other people who should be in the wings, you know, this is something. But I understand intuitively your criticisms about the Green Party. It should be, and you've heard me talk about it here. There's no reason that these parties, including the Green Party, should not be flooding these distressed communities and saying, hey, look at what these two other parties, look how they have failed you, and we have this to offer. So why not consider us? Why not Why shouldn't these parties make a strong attempt to cultivate a presence in these communities, especially if they believe they have something that is compatible with the interests of these communities?
Yeah, and I want to say one more thing, because I think it also jumps to the onus of the community, where we should actually build a candidate. You know, kind of like get a candidate out there where we can, and, you know, me and you, we always talk about Harold Washington. You know, Harold was built by the people because he worked for the people when he was in the state Senate and he was a congressman. And, you know, at first, Harold didn't want to run, you know, but he gave a mission to the people out there to raise a certain amount of money, and then he would consider it. Apparently, the people responded in call, and that's what got him to run. But I feel like, you know, we've lost the way of, you know, building a candidate instead of candidates coming to us. And I think you have talked about that before with me. So, and I think that's something that we have to practice again.
Thank you so much, Henry, for your call from Chicago today. Thank you. From Los Angeles, we have DX. You're on the air.
Hello, Yutree.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine, and I hope you're having a fun and safe trip.
Oh, it's great. It's being back home.
The people of New York are really getting a great treat to hear you.
Oh, thank you so much.
And you're back in your old stomping grounds. I got one question for you. When are you coming out to Los Angeles?
Oh, as soon as somebody invites me, I'll come.
I'm waiting for that. I'll be there, believe me. So on the question of voting, I agree with you that withholding your vote is a very effective strategy. I also have another strategy, which is vote for a progressive person if you can find one. Vote for, in other words, another party besides the Democrats and the Republicans, because it's obvious that when you vote for either one of them, we don't get what we want. But the only problem with both of those courses of action is that, as Joel indicated and as the caller indicated a few seconds ago, it takes a mass movement, a mass amount of people in order to affect any kind of change. And that's a problem, because we are so heavily laden in this country with propaganda. And unfortunately, stations like PRN don't have the reach that, say, a Fox News does. And
oh, we have the reach. We are Internet. Well, we have worldwide reach.
Well, I'm saying...
I get it.
Yeah, reach isn't the correct word. I guess it would be viewership, listenership, numbers, actual numbers. And there's things we can do to promote that. Of course, we try, you know, to promote. But I think the way they put this propaganda out and how people are so conditioned just to look at the major stations, and if you don't have, I don't know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars behind you, they don't really seek that, you know, and I think that's a problem. So the way this has affected me is that I don't take the electoral process seriously at all anymore. I mean, my course of action in 2012, when I was utterly disgusted with Barack Obama, I went ahead and voted for Jill Stein of the Green Party. Was going to vote for Rocky Anderson, but he wasn't on the ballot in California. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to sit it out, as you suggested, this year. I'm going to sit it out. And in 2016... I may sit it out then as well, because obviously, you know, without a lot of people doing the same thing, it's not going to do me any good to vote for a third party again. So that's my solution right now.
Well, how prevalent is your view in your circle or sphere of influence?
It's hard. I mean, I see a lot of apathy, and I think that's going to get worse. The people in my circle of friends and circle of acquaintances are very apathetic. They've just given up, and it's as if they only had two choices, and they can't see anything else. You wouldn't believe how many people that I now talk to, who I wasn't talking to in 2012, who went ahead and voted for Barack Obama. And I said, did you realize there was someone else you could have voted for? And they had no idea. I mean, it's right there in front of your face. It's on the ballot, but I don't think people even pay attention to that. They've been so heavily propagandized. Within my circle of acquaintances, people are just, I guess you could say, apathetic. They're either not going to vote or they're going to suck it up again and vote for whoever the Democrat is.
Well, thank you for your call, DX.
Thank you. Great. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. From New York, Allie, you will be the last caller today. But I have to ask you to be nice and tight because we're running close to time.
Okay. Hi, you three. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I hope that you're having a great time in New York right now.
I'm having a ball.
Yes. On the question of voting, I just wanted to tell everyone to do what I did on the last primary here in New York. It's really, really, really hard for me not to go out and vote. But what I'm doing this day is my vote is against the main candidate. And in this case, it was about Cuomo. But this is what I do. This is what I did. You know, Cuomo used the same technique as Bloomberg with advertisement. They bombard your mailbox with garbage. So you know what I did? Three of them, I took it. I crossed out my name. I know they could see my name. I took him out your marker. I put a cross around his face, and I put back, please send back to sender.
So you started your own movement. You gave them back their trash.
Yes, because what I did with Bloomberg, I called Bloomberg headquarters, and the guy didn't want to hear me, and I didn't know what to do. I called twice. So this time around, I decided that I would do that, and that's what I have been doing. And another thing, I went on and I vote for Safia Teachout. But you know what? I knew that I didn't want to vote for her. The next time that I'm going there to vote on the general election for this governorship, is the same thing. I will vote for the Green Party. And before on the last election that I participated against Cuomo, I voted for the party with Charles Barron. The Freedom Party.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what people should do. I agree with you. People should look around all the party. And even if they don't want to win, there is a point that you have to make. And that's what I have been doing. But send back the garbage. Cross out your name. Cross their faces and send it back. Put it in a mailbox. In the mailboxes.
Very quickly, Allie, I want to ask you this. How you took a particular kind of action. What is the view in your circle of friends? How are they thinking about this process? Do they think like you do?
Well, I meet with different groups. I meet with a Stop Mass Incarceration group. Then I meet with two other groups that belong to Occupy. Some of these people, some of the occupiers, they don't want to have anything to do with voting because they know this voting thing is rigged. I mean, we could go over there and throw that vote, and they already know who's going to win the election. This is something that all of us, we know that already, especially the corruption around the country, but especially here in New York. A lot of these people, what they're doing, they're voting for the Green Party. That's what a lot of the people that I talk to, they think similar like me, but I have been telling people what I did with the advertisement that the Cuomo campaign sent me, because I'm getting tired to see my mailbox fill up with this. And I'm a registered Democrat, and the reason that I'm not going to change party is because I want to tell the Democrats that I'm not voting for them, because they can tell who is voting and who. As soon as they give you a number when you go to vote, and as soon as you sign, they know. They can mm-hmm. tell through their computer who you're voting for.
No
and
question.
And that is the point.
Thank you so much, Allie, for your call today. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank
a
you.
Pleasure talking with you.
The same.
This brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it did stimulate you to rethink this business of what your options are as a voter or would-be voter. And I hope that you have this conversation, not just with yourself, but to kind of bring it to your circle of friends and begin to think about these things, but also to get louder about it. We're not talking loudly enough. This is one of the issues that I have with us. We're too quiet. We should be out there making ourselves heard. Coming up next, Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. I would love to hear what you're thinking. Write me an email at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. It is always a pleasure and a great, great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday.